2 of the interview with Dr. George Wheeler Gouvier. Well, you were just describing your consulting career. Is there anything more about it that you would like to record before we go on to another topic?
I don't think so, Dr. Trainum.
Well, your rather estimable career has been recognized by your peers in terms of awards and honors. Can you tell me something about those? No need to be modest.
Well, I think you have a listing of them.
We would like to get them on the tape. When did you become a member of the National Academy of Engineering in the U.S.?
I don't remember.
Okay.
Do I have the director here. I'll just let it go.
All right. Well, you have had activities with your professional societies throughout your career, I presume.
Yes. Do you want me just to run over them quickly?
Sure.
All right. Why don't we do that? I've been active in the Chemical Institute of Canada, and I was chairman of the Chemical Engineering Division back in 1948-49. I haven't been active since, in recent years. I've been a member of the Engineering Institute of Canada and a fellow of that institute since 1968. I was a member of the Canadian Institute of Mining and Metallurgy since 1950 and president in 1966. I became a member of the American Institute of Chemical Engineering back in 1953, and I might say that I got a tremendous amount of benefit out of that institute. I rarely had the opportunity to attend meetings, but I was an avid reader of all of its publications, and in the days when I was active at the University of Alberta in research and in developing curriculum, I found the AICHE publications of inestimable value. And recently I was sent an award. I don't know, is it here?
I think a half century membership. That is?
That's it, yes. With a small diamond in the pin. I wrote the president to thank him for it. I've been active in the Association of Professional Engineers here in Alberta for many years, and I was president in 1958. I served a stint as member of the National Research Council. That's the Canadian equivalent of your organization of the same name.
What were your responsibilities for the National Research
Council? I was just a member of the council, reviewing programs and sitting more or less as a board of directors. I became a foreign associate of the National Academy in 79. And
that was the National Academy of Engineering in the U.S.
Of Engineering in the U.S. I've been active in the World Petroleum Congress since 1960, a member of the Permanent Council. I've was a member and a chairman of the major committee called the Scientific Program Committee for a number of years. I'm a founding member of the Canadian Academy of Engineering, which is the counterpart of your National Academy. And those are the principal organizations.
Did you have any particular responsibilities besides being a member? Were you a journal editor or a officer besides the one office you mentioned?
No, I've never been a journal editor. With the Association of Professional Engineers, I was chairman of the Act and Bylaws Committee for quite a while, and that was rather an important role, and then chairman of the Committee on Collective Bargaining. But I think my most important committee of this sort was the Scientific Program Committee of the World Petroleum Congress, because in that I headed a committee of about a dozen people from all corners of the world, and we reviewed technical papers that were offered for submission to the World Petroleum Congress and adjudicated on them. That was quite important. We haven't talked about directorships. Is that relevant?
Certainly.
Would you like to?
Please do.
Well, after I took early retirement from the Conservation Board, I was invited by a number of companies to serve on their boards. And one of them was Texaco Canada, what was then the wholly owned subsidiary of Texaco Inc., Texaco Canada Limited. And we had a Canadian board, and I served on that board from about 78 until the company was purchased by Imperial Oil, a subsidiary of Exxon. The Canadian company was purchased by a Canadian subsidiary of Exxon. Let's see, what other... Oh, I served on the board of Cooperative Energy Development Company, Raylo Chemicals, Foremost Energy, I mentioned Texaco, Canadian Montana Gas, Combustion Engineering of Canada, Stone and Webster of Canada, Bow Valley Resources, Western Gas Marketing. The only boards I'm on now are Stone and Webster, Stone & Webster Canada, which is a sub of Stone & Webster of Boston, and it is a very large engineering construction company. I'm also on the board of Foremost Industries, which is a local company that manufactures all-terrain vehicles and also has a division that offers services to the oil and gas industry. And I continue on the board of Montana Power, Montana Gas. I shouldn't say Montana Power. Montana Pipeline and Montana Gas.
Have you ever had any mental gymnastics, I suppose one would say, after having served on the Conservation Board in which you were regulating the petroleum industry, and then you left that and became a member of the Board of Directors of one or more petroleum industries. Did the point of view have to shift at all?
Yes, it definitely shifted. I'll give you an illustration. In the board, our concern was always of the ultimate long-term recovery of oil. Our focus was on ensuring that the production rates of wells did not exceed that which would lead to the maximum recovery. On the board of Texaco, the attitude was we want to produce our wells at the fastest rate because the time value of money is a very important matter to the corporation. Whereas the conservationist, he has to have some regard for the time value of money, but it's a much less significant factor in his thinking than it is in the corporation. But the other thing, and I found this in every company I was with, the companies have a very great respect for the law and the regulations, and they are very, very careful to abide by the rules. The companies I was associated with, mind you, they'll make a lot of efforts to get the rules changed to suit their needs. And I saw that in Texaco. They made efforts to get higher allowables from the board, and the board would resist those. And then usually there'd be some kind of compromise worked out.
Because of your experience on the board, did you have a feeling that you were, in one sense, an intermediary in your service on the petroleum company boards, or to help them understand the conservation board's point of view?
Yes, and I think that was probably the reason I was invited to join some of these boards, because they felt that my background on the other side, if you like,
yes,
would help their understanding. One thing I didn't mention in connection with the consulting, and this might be of interest, I'm involved right now in advising a law company retained by the federal government of Canada to defend an act, not an act, to defend an action brought against the federal government of Canada by the Indian bands in Alberta, who are alleging that the federal government of Canada, through its Department of Indian Affairs, did not properly administer on the Indian oil and gas lands. And this raises questions of correlative rights, that is, were the Indian lands granted appropriate allowables? And it really raises a review of the entire production history of one of the major oil and gas fields here. So I'm finding that very interesting. And the Indians, incidentally, are making claims which the federal government considers almost ludicrous, and to me they seem unreasonable. But if these claims were allowed, there's upwards of $700 or $800 million involved. So it's a big issue. They claim that they didn't get, that the royalties that were set were insufficient, that the prices for which their oil and gas were sold were wrong, and all goes on forever. Another interesting thing I'm involved with currently is through the government of Canada, we have an organization called Canadian Industrial Development Assistance, CIDA, and CIDA has a major project in Pakistan. And part of the project, this is where the Canadian government is funding work in Pakistan. Part of the project is to establish a regulatory agency for the oil and gas industry along the pattern of the Alberta board. So I'm involved advising on that, and obviously finding it interesting because so much of my background was right in that area.
Does that carry you to Pakistan to do the advising?
Yes. I've only been there once so far, but this is going to continue over a few years, and I anticipate several trips. It's a long trip from here.
It is.
And tiring.
Yes.
We go through London and then nonstop from London to Islamabad is a tough flight.
Some 30 years ago, you wrote an article about engineering, economics, and conservation. And you said that industry has been most helpful in the cause for conservation in its support of the conservation agencies. And you wrote, "I see continued fine relations between industry and the conservation agencies, and even better conservation ahead." Has your viewpoint of that 30 years ago been sustained, or has it changed?
It's definitely been sustained, and I think there's been tremendous progress in the past 30 years. I don't know whether there is room for as much progress in the future. I don't mean with respect to relations, but I mean with respect to gains in recovery and improvements in conservation. You know, we didn't talk about the environment. Even in the early days with the board, environmental protection was something that we just naturally assumed was part of our job. It wasn't spelled out anywhere, and we didn't have a Department of Environment, but it was part and parcel of whatever we did in the oil fields. Over the years, that has become much more in the public eye, and it is now a much more substantial part of the activity. And many of the public hearings relate as much to environment and the public reaction as they do to some of the earlier technical features that we might have dealt with.
In one sense, then, the concerns of the board were a bit ahead of the fashion and the public.
I think they were. Now, I'm not saying that in the early days we did a complete job, because looking back, I can see that we did not, and many advances have been made. But environment was always in the picture.
If I may, let me cite another publication of yours. A couple of decades ago, you predicted that the 90s, where we are now, would be marked by increasing use of gas, increasing use of synthetic oil, hydro, nuclear energy sources, and decreasing dependence on crude oil for energy in Canada. How on target was your prediction?
Well, it wasn't very good with respect to nuclear. Increasing use of gas, definitely. Increasing use of synthetics, definitely. By synthetics, I was then, and I'm now referring to what we call synthetic crude oil from the Athabasca deposit, tar sands or oil sands. Decreasing relative use of oil, but certainly not decreasing absolute use of oil. I don't know whether in that quotation I said relative use, but I think that might have been implied. But certainly the relative use of gas and synthetics has increased.
What's your view on the duration, so to speak, of our oil resources? There are some who give very pessimistic views for the future, and wondering where your career points you to speculate.
Well, I'm not pessimistic. Let's do this in segments. If we think of the conventional oil industry in North America, and by that I mean ordinary crude oil, light, medium, and modestly heavy, but not oil shale or not oil sands or tar sands. We're on the decline, and we have what's called a life index in the U.S. probably of 8 or 9, I don't know, 8 or 9 years. In Canada, I don't know, 10 or 12 years, which simply means that at the current rate of production, the currently known reserves under current technology would last that number of years. But that's an index. It isn't a lifetime. Its units may be in years, but it doesn't mean life. I would say that our currently known conventional oil and gas in North America is on a slow decline. And if we had nothing else, if we had no imports and we had no oil sands and oil shales were never going to be in the picture, we're already in trouble. So that part's on the decline. The oil sands is an enormous resource, and its production has increased quite a bit in the past few years, and I foresee a fairly dramatic expansion in the oil sands to take up the slack of the declining conventional in Canada. We're also seeing increasing offshore production in Canada, the new Hibernia field, which you're probably familiar with. But when we look worldwide, the resources, even the known resources, are very much larger. The Middle East, of course, you're aware of, it's got enormous resources. And what the pessimists don't seem to accept is that we probably only discovered a fraction of what is or is here. I think in North America we've discovered a pretty substantial fraction, because there's been a lot of exploration here. But take the Caspian Sea. The modest amount of exploration there has revealed an enormous potential. And in Siberia, enormous, and much more in the Middle East. So, Dr. Trainum, in answer to your question, I'm not at all pessimistic. North America is going to be increasingly dependent on imports, but there's going to be lots of oil for many, many years.
Each year, the editor of the book review of the New York Times, comes out on Sunday, closes out the year with a list of books that the editor considers to be the most significant books published in the past year. And the 1996 year-end book review included among the 100 books listed one entitled The End of Science. And the capsule summary indicated that the author thought that all the great discoveries had been done, and that from now on it would be simply tinkering with details.
Was this with tongue in cheek?
Apparently not. Apparently a very serious point of view. And the editor of the book review section considered it to be a very noteworthy publication. I would like to know what's your reaction to that point of view.
I think it's sheer nonsense.
Apparently, most scientists do. That I have asked that question to others, and I get that same point of view. Okay. Certainly, your continuing activity indicates that you still find excitement in the area.
Oh, most definitely.
Is there anything that you think we need to add to the record to have a more or less complete record as you would like to have it of your career?
There's one other thing I'd like to mention. While I was at the board, I worked often in the early mornings and often in the late nights, and often with my friend Khaled Aziz. And together we wrote a textbook on the flow of complex fluids in pipes. And this didn't turn out to be a bestseller, but it was published by, I think, Reinhold. But one of the things that pleased my friend and me more than the royalties we received, which were minimal, was the fact that it was recognized by McGraw-Hill, the competing publisher, as one of the technical books of the month. And in this book, among other things, I was able to include a great deal of the results of the early research I did at the University of Alberta. And I was very happy to have that opportunity. I had a good working relationship with my friend Aziz. Incidentally, he's a Pakistani who went to the University of Michigan, got a master's degree, came to the University of Alberta, worked under me, and got a master's degree in petroleum engineering, went back to Pakistan, became chief engineer for Sui Gas, wrote to me and said he thought he'd return to North America and take a PhD. Where should he go? I said, I think you better go to Rice. And he went to Rice, and he got awards as their outstanding graduate student. He did exceptionally well. He later came back on the faculty of the University of Calgary, and he was stolen away from Calgary by Stanford, where he is now a senior professor and a world authority on mathematical simulation of petroleum reservoirs. And he's arriving here on Sunday, and we're going skiing together on Monday. That won't be in the
final. Yes, that will. Tell me something about your family.
Well, I'm very proud of my family. First of all, my wife is a very talented woman. She is a graduate from the University of British Columbia and also the University of Alberta.
Her name?
Pardon me?
Her name?
Doris Ida Govier. Her maiden name was Kemp, K-E-M-P. And her interest has always been literature. Her graduate work was in the field of English literature, but she very early became enthused with Canadian literature and disappointed that it was not receiving the recognition which she thought it should receive. So she became a, not exactly a promoter, but an advocate of the merits of Canadian literature, and initially through the university here, and later on her own, she developed courses on Canadian literature, and to this day is involved in guiding interested women in particular into the field of Canadian literature. She and I, my wife and I, share a great interest in ballroom dancing, and we do quite a bit of that. I have three daughters. The youngest lives in Calgary. She is unmarried. She's a school teacher, enjoys it very much. She specializes in the younger grades, and she's very, very good with small children. We see her frequently, of course. My middle daughter, the youngest daughter is Susan. Middle daughter is Catherine. She's married with two children, lives in Toronto. She has made a real name for herself in Canadian literature. She is a writer, a journalist and writer of fiction, and has been very successful in a very difficult field. My oldest daughter, her name is Trudy. She has a PhD in philosophy, was a professor at Trent University in Ontario, associate professor, I guess, has been on the faculty of the University of Calgary, but with two children, is no longer, she is busy, and but extremely active as a writer of philosophical works, and she is the author of a treatise in introductory philosophy, which is used in a great many universities in the U.S. and worldwide. And in fact, just this past couple of months, she was invited to South Africa to give a series of lectures based on the fact that they are using her textbook.